Hello and welcome to the Exiled Eagles end of season wrap up. We'll be chatting about a fantastic last month of the season, nominate some standout moments in the Exiled Eagles alternative awards, look forward to the World Cup, kind of, and have a chat with ex-Leeds Sunderland striker Michael Bridges about what he thought of Palace's season. So I'm here with the usual bunch of chancers. Hello, Dale.
Hello.
Rob Seltzer, how are you going?
Good day.
And up in Brisbane, Mark Werner, how are you, mate?
Good evening, Tony, I'm well.
Excellent, excellent. So basically, pretty much for the last 9 months, what with the Frank de Boer debacle and ridiculous injuries, Zaha getting vilified, missed last-minute penalties, untold last-minute goals conceded, I've said this is the worst season of all time. And yet, I didn't want the season to end. So, Mark, tell me, was it a good season or was it as bad as I remember? Am I just being typically negative?
No, not typically. What a crazy season with everything you just mentioned. Rollercoaster ride probably doesn't even cover it, mate. And, you know, it was like watching a horror movie between your fingers there. You didn't know what was going to happen next. And it was all said and done and we finished 11th. So, it was a crazy old season for many varied facts, which you kind of touched on. After a first couple of rounds, if you said, we'll offer you 11th now, would you take it? Everyone would have, hands down. And
hell yeah.
But, man, what a ride to get there. And like you say, yeah, you got towards the end, you thought, oh, this is crazy, but I'd like it to kick on. But here we are, and make another season in the Premier League. So, happy days.
Yeah, you'll definitely take it, no doubt about it. And just those final performances were fantastic, I thought. Dale, like, were we as good as I thought we were, or were we just playing crap opposition?
I think it's a six for one, half dozen of the other. We definitely played some of the best football I've seen Palace play. But the opposition we played against was weak. Leicester didn't care. West Brom were pony. I think we put them to the sword, but the opposition just wasn't much chopped towards the end of the year, was it?
No, I saw a thing in The Guardian where they said, like, Jamie Vardy walked out to the Selhurst pitch literally in his sandals with a towel under his arm. He was out on the beach.
I think if you think about last season and how the season ended, i.e. we had a horrible run in bar playing Hull on the penultimate game, we deserved to have the run in we had this year. And it was great that everyone we played against either was on the beach, relegated, or virtually relegated. It really helped.
But I agree, we played some absolutely fantastic football, I saw. Some of the best I've literally ever seen, I would say. And sort of, what do you think, Rob? Is Roy the man for that? Have we got him to thank?
Oh, for sure. Like, I agree with everything that the Mason Mount Tribute Act over there said. Roy came in and he did what he had to do. He steadied the ship first and foremost. There's no point in trying to play this expansive football when you haven't scored a goal in seven games. But then once the players came back, he got them out of show, he got them playing football. And if you look at the front four or five players that we've got, they can play that football. They're all happy on the ball. They can all take the ball in tight spaces. And the second goal against West Brom is one of my favourite goals of the season. Just how intricate that passing was, and it just takes me back to probably 4 years ago when we played Chelsea at home and they scored a very similar goal, and it was just one touch passing and we just couldn't live with it. It wasn't the fact that, you know, it was just a stunning strike or whatever, it's just that was fantastic football. They just passed around us, one touch, ball moved quickly and they scored. And we did that, a Palace team did that to an opposition team, whereas for the five previous seasons that when we'd been in the Premier League, our biggest problem has been we can do teams on the break if they come at us, but as soon as teams sit in, we haven't got a clue how to break them down. Now, we're showing we can break them down. And I'd say that's Roy Hodgson and obviously the players that we've got.
Can we keep it up next season, you know? Are teams going to work us out or are we going to stick to this sort of Zaha and Townsend up front?
I think it all depends on the recruitment, doesn't it? You'd have thought teams would work us out. They'll probably never be able to fully work out Wilfried Zaha. I don't think anyone can fully work out Wilfried Zaha.
No.
But, you know, if you don't have an out-and-out striker making out-and-out striker runs, eventually that's going to tell. You know, there are times when, you know, Towns has just whipped a ball in and there's been no one in the box, or, you know, someone's getting in there late. You do occasionally need, I think it's horses for courses, it's been said on other podcasts, there are times when you needed Benteke up front. So if you're playing Chelsea away, Man United away, one of the big four, big six away, you need a Benteke up front, because you're just going to, there'll be times just humping it long and he's got to hold the ball up. Whereas you're humping it long and they've got three big centre backs that are just winning everything in the end, the ball's just coming back, it's not going to work. So it will work at times, but I do think we need plan B, C, and D as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the end, we finished 11th. But after everything, Dale, do you reckon that was a false position, or do you reckon that's where we should have finished?
Mate, I think it's, if you look at our squad at the start of the season, you'd have said this team should finish 10th to 13th, 9th, 10th to 13th, right? In the predictions thing we did in the Sydney guide, I had us as 12th. I think that was about right. I'd have looked today, the Premier League was weak. No matter how you want to put it, it was weak this year. It was the least number of points needed to stay up. That doesn't go anything against us. I think we deserve to finish where we finished. We were brilliant. We played, take the seven games out of it, and we were as good as anyone outside the top six. Simple as that. Right? So was it a false position? You can say yes, because no team should lose its first seven games without scoring a goal and be able to stay up. Bottom line, it shouldn't happen. It just shouldn't happen. But equally, we were a team who didn't deserve to be in that situation. So I think it was the right position for us in the end.
Yeah, I agree with you. Mark, we were saying, you know, all these disastrous things happened, and especially the injuries through Christmas and the last-minute goals we were conceding. At what point did you sort of suddenly think, yeah, I think we're going to be all right here? Was there a moment, was there a particular game where you're like, yeah, no, I think we'll be fine?
Yeah, it was the final whistle after the Stoke game. which is obviously when we were mathematically safe, and you know, for all what it was worth, I was like, yeah, we're safe, we're not safe. Oldham, which is before my time, but I looked up on it, and which is a bit cringeworthy, that I believe we did some sort of parade around.
It was awful.
All the sort of jazz and the planets aligned, and down we went. But yes, look, mate, I was talking it up a good game before that, but I wasn't holus bolus sold on the idea until we were mathematically safe, and that's just the type of bloke I am in any sport or any team until it's bolted down. Yeah. I don't collate too much, but probably more to answer you.
Well, then you're a welcome member of the Palace family, then, because we're all exactly like that as well.
But probably to answer your question more so, mate, like sort of result-wise, or once we got going, you thought, you know, you sort of breathed a sigh of relief. You're like, no, we'll be all right, we'll get through this. For me, just personally, was after the Leicester game that we got up 3-0. Over there, I just thought we were still in the clutches of a horrible injury run. We had Sacco stepping up at the time and being a makeshift striker. Leicester are no mugs, you know, they won the league only two seasons prior. And away, I thought we're a good mob and we run rings around them that day. And given that we did with sort of a shoestring squad on a plan B, I thought, you know, with guys coming back and the way things were headed, yeah, I thought we're going to be good. And we didn't put too many, take too many steps wrong after that.
No, it's funny enough, if you'd asked me the same question, I would have said that Leicester game as well. I was like, yeah, we deserve to be here.
Yeah.
Rob, you got anything to add?
Yeah, I'd say Leicester game, but then I would probably say when I knew for sure it was we're good is Huddersfield away. I know, like, it was towards the end of the season, like, but we'd come out as we had that horrendous injury thing, like, and we played the big four, or we played like Chelsea, United, Spurs, and us, and Liverpool, and had just lost in every game, and you're like, oh Jesus Christ! And you think if confidence is that low, and we go to Huddersfield and they get a shitty 1-0 win from a crap corner, then we're banging trouble, because what we're going to do? But we just we destroyed them. We absolutely destroyed them. I was like, this team were a team that can beat anyone around us. And as Dale rightly said, we can mix it with the top six, even with the players out we had out injured. And then you look at our running, we're like, well, I was confident we could win all of them, to be honest. So as soon as that, when we dusted up Huddersfield as comfortably as we did, I was like, yeah, we're sweet.
Can I just say, I don't want to make us sound like we're all one and the same, but I've written down Leicester away, and then I almost felt definitely certain Huddersfield away. So good choices, lads.
Yeah. Well, there wasn't a lot of games really to pick from, was there?
Exactly. No.
but I did also write down that I felt we had a full storm when we played Burnley at home. We beat Burnley 1-0. And I thought, well, that's it. We're good now. And I think after that, we went on that horror run of five games without a win or six games without a win. And I suddenly started to think, oh, shit. But then Huddersfield came around. So there you go.
There you go. Well, yeah, it probably was the Palace roller coaster this year. And yeah. I mean, I just, by the end, I was bloody enjoying it, you know, once it was all said and done. Roll on next year. Cool. All right. We'll end the part here, and then we will be back for part two, where we've got our heads together and got the Exiled Eagles Alternative Awards. So see you in part two. Welcome back to Exiled Eagles, sponsored by Top Corner Recruitment. Seeing as pretty much to a man we're a bunch of grumpy bastards, we thought we'd take an alternative look at the season's biggest talking points. All the other great podcasts, they've sort of picked their, you know, player of the season and all that kind of business. So yeah, we thought we'd take a slightly different look. So boys, you ready for this?
Yeah.
Go.
Yep. Okay, so first award... Who made the biggest tit of themselves this season? Dale, what do you reckon?
I won't say the obvious, because we all know who everyone wants to say.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Steve Parrish for appointing Frank de Boer.
Okay.
Yeah. Wanted to change it up far too quickly and took a punt on Frank de Boer. It didn't work. So I'm going to go with that one to be different.
But biggest tit, I mean, he sorted it right out. I mean,
yeah, that's hard.
Was he lucky? Was he lucky with the second one, or?
Well, that was another point that I put. I also put that he admitted that he was wrong and he fixed it pretty quickly and basically saved the season.
this is pretty harsh.
Look, okay, in that case then, I'll go with Christian Benteke against Bournemouth.
Yeah, okay, that one stands up. Yeah.
I had those two, and I also put Frank de Boer for just simply coming in and deciding that he wanted to change something. I think we all had a look of horror, those of us who got together in the pub for the game against West Brom in Hong Kong. I'm sure, Mark, you were there, weren't you? You must have just thought, what on earth is he playing here? This is ridiculous. Yeah. And we never thought it would be the same come Huddersfield. And, yeah, I mean, wow. What a tit.
Perfect.
He said it. Just seeing that lineup of that Huddersfield game when someone posted it recently, he was like, oh, my God, I can't believe we actually thought that was a workable system.
The thing is, we didn't think it was a workable system. Apparently one of the world's best ever defenders did.
But the interesting thing about it was, if you actually go back and look at it, it wasn't a million miles away from what our 11 was towards the end of the season. You know, Dan obviously out injured, Punch gone, injured, but I think would have been dropped anyway. But then, you know, other players are there or thereabouts. So it just goes to show that he had no idea what he was doing with that squad of players.
No. The players didn't either, you could tell.
No.
Yeah. No. Mark, how about you? Biggest tit?
Look, Rob stole my line in the intro by saying g'day, and Dale has stolen my biggest tit award by mentioning Christian Benteke, which is obviously the penalty at Bournemouth there, which is absolutely ridiculous, wasn't it? It was grossly unprofessional, selfish, ridiculous, and only allowed to get away with it because Luke is a good bloke. And polite, was like, oh, have the ball, mate, do your worst. And he did, and, Yeah, got nout for his troubles. So that was my biggest tit award. To go back to what Dale said regarding Frank de Boer, yeah, was up in Hong Kong, mate, and had the pleasure of or displeasure of meeting Frank up there, and yeah, quite a miserable prick, to be honest. I waited out front of it. I literally staked out the team out front of the hotel for about 2.5 hours just to get a couple of pics with the guys. Oddly enough, out the four teams up there, Palace were the only team that didn't have a scheduled fan day type exercise or activity. So it was basically a case of putting your ear to the ground and just stalking them, which I did. I was waiting there for hours in the blazing sun. My missus had given up on it and left me to go shopping. The boys finally came out and, yeah, miserable old Frank trundled out and begrudgingly came over for a photo and a shake of the hands, and I wished him well for the season. And, yeah, we all saw what happened after that.
He gave him the kiss of death, yeah. Basically.
I did indeed. So, but in any case, yeah, it was a good trip up there all the same. So, yeah, absolutely. That was mine.
Nice. And Rob, you got anything to...
So obviously Frank de Boer's up there. I mean, for everything mentioned before, plus, my God, I mean, if you didn't like Pardew when he spoke to the press, and you can't listen to de Boer, because was that not the most boring thing you would have ever heard? Like, slow, like, what are you talking about? But the winner of my tit award is going to be one Mr. Chris Sutton.
Yes, he's on my list. Yes,
for his absolute bollocks, he drivels out about Wilfred Zaha and his diving, and then you see someone sneeze next to Eden Hazard the week later, and he flies over, and Chris Sutton's like, "Oh, definite penalty for that one." And then Dele Alli,
clever play.
The Wilf gets. Kung Fu kick to the face, and Sutton's like, "Nah, it's not a penalty. Dive to get it. Like, just do one, you absolute Oh, Chris Sutton.
Also, Rob, do you know, he slates Wilf and says he's a diver. He's this. He's that. And 2 weeks later, it's England have missed a trick not having Wilfred Zaha letting him go and play for the Ivory Coast. He's just what England need. Blah blah blah."
Totally. It's funny because my biggest tits were both Chris Sutton and Garth Crooks for exactly the same thing. He slags off Wilf every week, and then it's like, but he should go to Spurs because he's too good for Palace.
Oh, yeah, wankers.
It's like, well, yeah, you've just got such a big club mentality. I've also got an honourable mention to Alan Pardew as well for just an absolutely catastrophic season. Just a clueless idiot.
So I heard a stat that if you took out Pardew and left West Brom with Pulis and Moore, they'd have been mid-table.
Yeah.
What? So if they hadn't played any of those games, or
nothing, take out all of the Pardew results, and just leave the Pulis results. When Pulis left, they were like 14th or whatever, and Darren Moore obviously lost 1 out of 5. They'd have been mid-table. So Pardew just useless.
I mean, he's got to be done now, hasn't he?
If that bloke gets a job, I will be growing hair again. I'll tell you that for free.
All right, so a nice mix of tits. Well done, boys. Can you name it? Can you name your most dreadful performance, either individual or team performance? Rob, you got one?
Oh, Christ.
I mean, there's plenty to choose from.
I mean, I don't know. I just don't think you can look past the first game of the season against Huddersfield, a team that had just got... I mean, we looked absolutely clueless. Like, we're a Premiership football team. I reckon Barnett would have given us a damn good going on that. We just didn't have a clue. Players didn't know where they're supposed to be playing. They didn't know the way they're supposed to be playing. Again, there's another honourable mention for Mr. Benteke's performance in the first half against Chelsea away. That was impressive. I'm pretty sure he ran less than I'm moving now, and I'm sat on my bed here. So honourable mentions to that. But I just can't look past that. That Huddersfield game, it was just so bad.
I'm glad we can laugh about it.
It was, I mean, it's a great way to start the season off. Midnight, you're like, right, we've got the first game promoted team, we've got Frank de Boer in, it's brilliant. And then half an hour into it, I'm going to bed, here we go again. Bloody hell, 9 months of this shit, I hate life.
Yeah. Mark, how about you?
Well, I took the time to get the run sheet and pen on my notes for this evening's pod, and I didn't put it on the WhatsApp group to let anyone know yet. It all seemed to be getting stolen, but my dreadful performance team-wise was the first game, mate, against Huddersfield. Like you boys, had all the joy of new season starting, promoted team, probably have our way with them, go on, get in, and I remember getting to the pub with a couple of boys, and we've got a table there on our screen. I think there was three of us, and there was three Huddersfield supporters who I never saw again all season. So they've lobbed in there, and just had a good laugh at us for the next 90 minutes. And we saw the lineup, and myself and the other boys were looking at each other, mouths agape, just thinking, my God, what's happened here?
And hell is going on.
Yeah, and what's going to happen in the next 37-odd games? So clearly, team-wise, that was a standout for me. I also have individual for myself, dreadful performance. I do like the lad, but Damo Delaney coming on in the 86th minute in the Spurs game. When we'd done battle and ridden our luck, lost his man, Kane, 1-0, Spurs.
That's not bad. He's on the pitch 5 minutes and gets a mention for worst performance of the season.
Yeah. On the clock, I had 4 minutes to do it, and I did it with a couple minutes to spare, Tony.
Mission accomplished.
Job done. Get him off. We've still got another sub left. What's happening?
Dale, how about you? 3 from 3 for Huddersfield.
I did write it down, but I knew everyone would go for it, so I had another one as well, which was the Roy's first game in charge against Southampton. I think I'll check the stats today, and I'm pretty certain it's something like 14 shots, but only 2 of them were on target. And I just remember that game. We just couldn't pass to each other. And if you want to talk about when it was really, really low, I think at that stage, I actually thought we are getting relegated here. I really did. So for me, that was probably our worst performance outside of the Southampton game. And individual, pains me to say it, and I think it's because we got spoilt for a little bit for a couple of weeks by Aaron Wan-Bissaka. But Joel Ward's first game back, I can't remember who it was against.
I've got it, Watford.
Brighton was back, wasn't it?
He just struggled. He looked like he hadn't played for months, which he hadn't, obviously. But he just really didn't look up to it. And I think everyone at that time was just like, well, what about Aaron Wan-Bissaka? Come on.
Yeah,
so those are probably the two for me.
Yeah, cool. I've got Joel Ward against Watford. I thought he was absolutely woeful second game back. And then I've also put Huddersfield and Swansea as well. The Swansea game at home was equally as dreadful. Yeah. Lucky those dark days are behind us. He says crossing his fingers and touching wood. Okay, so plenty to choose from here. Worst miss of the season. Dale, what do you reckon?
So, again, I'm going to try and be different, and you guys are going to have a go at me for this. I'm going to go for Wilf against West Brom at the end of the season.
I was thinking that too.
The cross came in from Van Aanholt, and it's just a simple side foot, and he almost went out for a throw, but it was bad, right?
And you just
thought to yourself, all the good stuff he's done this season, you put your house in it, it was a goal. And then he finished one 5 minutes later, 10 minutes later, and you thought, how'd you miss the first one?
Yeah.
So that one for me, that one.
Fair enough. Marky Mark?
Yeah, agree with Dale. Not that that was my worst miss, but yeah, I just watched that back in the highlights last night. He's got that plum on the penalty spot, and none in front of him, and he just made balls right up. But so agreeance there, mate. Mine, I had Benteke in the Leicester game, the 3-0, where we were running over him all day. Townsend's got the ball, running down to the byline, crossed it back in along the carpet for Benteke, who managed to nutmeg himself from about 2 yards out and just had an air swing, and that was that. And I was just, I couldn't believe it. It was unbelievable. I was watching it. How do you miss that? How do you miss it, man? You're like, you're a professional football player, B, you're on 30-odd million, and the pass was from so far out, just along the ground, and he's just, just went shot 20 legs. I thought, wow, that blew my mind. It really blew my mind. So that was...
That was special.
Yeah, it was very special and so close. Anyway, that was it for me, though.
Rob?
Honourable mention to our £30 million striker as well. Like, I feel bad we keep picking on him for the awful awards, but he just didn't have a great season, did he? Honourable mention for Liverpool.
This is his category as well.
No. Liverpool home and away. The away when he just skies it from... And then the home one at home when he should have lobbed the keeper, and I don't know what he's doing. But my miss of the season, and I'm going to paint the picture for you here. My 6 month... It's Scott Dan Burnley away.
That was mine.
September.
My 6 month old had just woke up. I was like, oh, I've got to go resettle him. We're running down the game. So like, I've got to watch into the game anyway. And I'm trying to resettle him. I've got the game on my iPad. Trying not, and then the ball comes in. Scott Dan is in the back of the net. All he has to do is let it touch him, and it goes in. And somehow, some way, he misses. And oh my God. And at this point, I've thrown the iPad out of the room. Kid's woken up properly now, crying. So not only did Scott Dan miss and lose us a point, he owes me a night's sleep.
Yeah, I was going to pick that as well. But then I couldn't work out if it was actually the best miss of the season, because it meant Frank de Boer got the book. So if he got something out of that, he might have hung about another couple of games. So, yeah, who knows. So I was going to go for that. And actually, PVA at Bournemouth, when we were away at Bournemouth, we were absolutely battering them, and he got put on one-on-one with the keeper.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, we're all over them. We just needed that one goal to put it to bed, and he just smashed it straight at the keeper.
Yeah.
And then a few minutes later, they went and equalised at the end. It's very frustrating. Also, a special mention to Troy Deeney for Watford when they were 1-0 up against us at home. on his own, the penalty spot.
Oh, can we add Ryan Shawcross as well into that then? Especially for Shawcross when he's cleared the ball quite perfectly from under our bar.
I think we should also add, just to keep Sean Robb happy, we should add Scott Engerfield for his penalty miss in the
Rip game
in October.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a tragedy.
Sorry, Scotty.
Poor Scotty.
Bastard.
All right then. So, Mark.
Yes.
Out of all the teams and players we played, who was the most overrated and, in the end, useless player or team we came up against?
Toss up between Arsenal and Chelsea. For me, opposition-wise, team-wise, I think everyone probably expected a bit more out of them.
I tell you what, both those teams did us no favours towards the end of the season.
Oh,
you're looking at all those other teams' run-ins, and you're like, oh yeah, they're not going to get another point. Like, play Chelsea or Arsenal, 3 points or a point, no problem.
Yeah, it was complete bullshit, mate. Particularly Arsenal, who did us twice on the bounce. Everyone was having a day out against them. And then we turn up first game, they snatch it at the death, and then nothing out the second. And then, like you say, with the other team not doing us any favours, every point that West Brom got away this season was against top six teams. So that's not doing us any favours at all there. But I think particularly after Wenger announced his retirement. I expected a bit more out of Arsenal as well to stand up for him and get a bit better results, and they sort of limped their way through the rest of the season and, you know, knocked out of the Europa semi-final. So I felt a bit for them for that. And I guess you always tout them.
Classic Arsenal.
Yeah, you know, they're typically always touted as finishing fourth, which they did do. They undersold that by a couple of places. And, yeah, they're probably my two overrated teams, anyway, for me this season.
Yeah. Dale, how about you then?
I don't know if you can class them as being overrated because they were not great all season, but United, when they came to Selhurst Park, just thought they weren't very good.
Yeah.
You know, Lukaku, people like Lukaku and Sanchez, and we were able to stick with them. Spurs, I'm going to caveat this by saying I think it must have just been us because Spurs weren't very good the two times we played them, and I was not impressed by Spurs at all this season, but you hear really good things about them.
Yeah, true.
And the other one, for me, quite interestingly, is I thought Lamina was going to be really, really good for Southampton. Came for a big price tag, played really well against us, and the rest of the season he sort of did nothing.
Yeah, so, nothing at all.
Yeah, quite surprised by that one. So those are probably my overrated players and individuals.
Right. And Rob?
Yeah, so my two overrated teams, I'd say, just because when we played them, I'd say were Burnley and Leicester. Burnley, everyone's raving about them, how hard they are to beat. But, okay, they beat us away, but anyone watching that game, we should have won that 4-1 comfortably. Well, probably 4-0,
yeah.
Apart from Chungi's perfect through ball for Chris Wood. And then Leicester, we tore them apart at their place. And okay, they didn't care when they came to us, but we beat them 8-0 overall. Mahrez did nothing, Vardy did nothing. So as teams and people talking about them, I'd say Burnley and Leicester, and overrated players, I'd probably say Pogba. He's
average all season.
Yeah, I mean, you just think a player of his athletic ability should just take a game by the scruff of the neck and just control it. But when he came to Selhurst, the only reason he did that is because we were knackered. That Luke had run himself into the ground three games in a row. Kabay had done it, MacArthur had done it. And
yeah, that's the no sub phase, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So, of course, a player that's fit and fresh and is worth £90 million, as you should hope, would get over boys that are running on, you know, path, really. They've just got nothing left. So, yeah, I'd say Burnley were more overrated for me because when we beat them at home, I think we were pretty damn comfortable. They don't get me wrong, they did very well, but I just think their style, just we were far too good for them. And Paul Pogba.
Yep, fair enough. I haven't really gone for any teams or particular players, just basically all the multi-million pound world-class superstars that Aaron Wan-Bissaka had in his pocket for his first three games, basically.
Yeah.
Nobody shone against him, and he's playing some of the best players in the world. So cool, all right. So, Dale, your most memorable moment of the season? And it could be a good thing, a bad thing. What's the sort of the thing that stood out for you the most? Made you laugh, made you cry?
There were two, both good. One was getting to meet Alan Smith.
Yeah,
that was brilliant.
What a legend.
Yeah, absolute ledge. Seeing that man strut his stuff around Kujiri's shirt off, lapping up the sunshine was a thing of beauty. Great to sit down with him. And the other one for me, that Leicester game, 5-0, I had to ask my beautiful fiance several times over the next 3 days, what was the score? Because I just couldn't believe it. It was, you know, to think about where we had been as a team, as we keep saying, 7 games, 7 defeats, no goals, to beating a pretty good side, 5-0, having already beaten them 3-0, it's just great. There are certain things you're going to remember all the time as a Palace fan, and I think for me personally, that's just one of them because I've just never seen us play like that.
Yeah, that was magical. It was just generally a good night, that one, wasn't it?
It was a great night.
Pretty really good.
Fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of fun. Yeah. How about you, Mark?
From a personal point of view, memorable moment of the season, which had been touched on a wee bit earlier, was the pre-season. Getting up to Hong Kong for the pre-season tournament, which consisted of ourselves, Liverpool, Leicester and West Brom. First outing, we played Liverpool and lost 2-0, and then played West Brom for third place, which we won 2-0. And that was memorable because Pulis was still at the club then. And oddly enough, in Hong Kong, not allocated seating. So whilst you had a ticket, it was just up to yourself to find your brethren and bunker down and get a patch. So Liverpool, we kind of came undone. We're in pockets of, you know, threes and fours and fives. By the West Brom game, we managed to get sort of 100, 150 of us in a corner. Bearing in mind, 95% of the crowd are just Liverpool. Let's be fair about that.
Yeah, yeah, it was totally red.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
Ridiculous. So we got a nice little pocket going on in the corner there with about 20 odd West Brom supporters on the balcony above us. So giving them a bit of stick for most of the game and telling Tony Pulis that we're having your house was most enjoyable for me. And the tournament itself, got to catch up with a couple of the Perth supporters that went up there and went up there. Myself with Richard Nicholas, a mate here from Brizzy, and my girlfriend had a fantastic time. From a team's point of view, from observing in the league, my favourite was Wolf's double against Brighton for a couple of reasons. He banged a double, only second headed goal there. Also against Brighton, his early one, which was in the semi-finals in the playoffs for us to go up. And what made me laugh the most, or what was most enjoyable about that for me, was Wolf talking it up in the week prior, saying, you know, I hate them and just going to send them back to wherever they came from, which would be Brighton, I dare say, Wilf, and did so. So that was cool, man, you know. He talked the talk and he walked the walk, and no better team to do it against than Brighton.
Absolutely. Good days, good days. How about you, Rob?
My most memorable for personal point would be for Arsenal game, because my first at home, first time at Selhurst in about 10 years.
Of course, yeah.
I've got both the Palace goals down the end. I was down towards the Holmesdale end, you know, meeting up with Jimmy Howland, having a few beers beforehand, and just like getting back to Selhurst, dropping some mustard on my jeans from a Palace burger, and then realizing, oh, you know, I'm back at football, fantastic, I need to wash my jeans again. Just all everything that went with that, so that was great. And yeah, like, you can't beat the Brighton game 3-2, can you? You could, even though we're over here, you could hear the atmosphere coming through the TV, and like, you knew that place was bouncing. And when Wilf got the second to go 3-1 up, you're like, this, and you just sense it. And so yeah, that was immense. Don't get me wrong, watching the Leicester 5-0 and carve them up was fantastic, but yeah, that Brighton atmosphere and all everything that went with it was quite special.
Yeah, it was just a shame for me, that Brighton game. It was just the sort of the way when they got back into it, there was just that sort of 40 minutes of real tension where it sort of really put the celebrations on ice. That was sort of a bit of a downer for me, where I was just chewing my fingernails until like the last 5
minutes.
Yeah,
chewed it.
Yeah, but still very good. And yeah, for me, I mean, I think one of the most enjoyable games I watched was in Perth when I was with Dale, went to the casino and watched the Leicester game that we won 3-0 at their place. We'd been at the cricket all day, 3 sheets to the wind, England got absolutely smoked. And it was good just to have like a silver lining at the end of those few days. It was like glowing red from sunburn and all sorts, but at a casino, these massive screens, a few other Perth-based Palace fans down there. It's a good crack, very good laugh. My other highlight of the season was CPFC Sydney-based, which was Did anyone go? No, you didn't watch when we played the Man United fans. Kevin Winston turned up at half time, still drunk from the night before. Came on at half time. His first touch, before he even touched the ball, he took a player out and they scored from the free kick. His second touch also didn't touch the ball. He took a player out and gave away a penalty. So, he'd been on the pitch 3 minutes and we were 2-0 down, but he hadn't touched the ball.
Are you Damo in disguise?
Yeah. So that was one of my highlights of the season. I'll never forget that.
Awesome.
Very entertaining. Yeah, as we're Australian based, does anyone have like a favourite Australian football moment? I assume, Mark, I can already guess what yours is, but I'll ask you anyway.
I dare say you have guessed what mine is, Tony, because you were with me. My good friend, and that would be a night at Sydney Olympic Stadium, watching our previous fearless leader, Mile Jedinak, score a hat-trick against Honduras to put us through the World Cup. It was a winner-take-all, fifth-ranked Asian qualifier versus the fifth-ranked South American, which was Honduras, nil-all in the leg over there, coming back to Sydney for the second leg with it all to play for, mate. Last team to qualify for the World Cup. Winner goes through, loser nothing. And yeah, I got along with yourself, mate, to that. We're both sporting Jedinak kits that night. Yours being Palace, yep. Mine being Socceroos.
Yeah.
And mate, we got to see the big man banging a hattie. And
yeah,
it was fantastic. Couldn't get script written, you know.
That was good.
Absolutely still an honorary member of our great club on the night. And, mate, we inspired many a chant, lining up for trains and whatnot afterwards. And, yeah, it was good. Very fitting.
And in classic Sydney fashion, you couldn't find anywhere to go on the piss afterwards because everywhere was shut.
Everywhere was shut.
Standard.
Yeah.
Rob, you got anything in particular?
Australian. I'm gonna. I don't watch much Australian football, but my favourite thing about what's happened with Australian football is in the grand final that the goal shouldn't have stood, and VAR still got it wrong.
That's the most A-League thing of all time.
Exactly. All this palaver and the biggest game of the season. The only thing that happened, they win 1-0, and the goal shouldn't have stood.
Goals off.
Unbelievable.
It's just unbelievable. It is unbelievable. That is exactly what VAR is for, that sort of situation. And it wasn't ready. That's all it was. It just they didn't have it to play.
The only thing that goal was missing in the grand final was a giant sauce bottle to be involved somehow.
Yeah, totally. That would be an ultimate A-League. How about you, Dale?
I'll go with the A-League semi-final, elimination final, whatever it was. What was the final score? I can't remember the final score, but there were...
3-2 to them.
3-2, four own goals, three own goals. The guy who scored three own goals scores a winner.
Yeah,
coaches, Terry Antonis, ex-Sydney FC player.
Coaches running on the pitch and attacking players. you know, is... They're trying to find a seat that wasn't in the pouring rain, and when we finally found one, there's just big drops coming off the roof onto our seats.
Yeah.
You know, everything that budget rate football is all about, really.
That was a wild night. It really was crazy.
That was the night we beat Leicester as well.
Yeah, it was good. Jedinak was mine as well, but special shout out to that Newcastle player who scored the flick free kick goal. Semi-final. That was very impressive. Really impressive. Yeah.
Can I just throw out one last award for pass of the season? Would it be Chung Un Lee to Chris Wood or Ryan Shawcross to PVA?
Shawcross to PVA was pretty perfect.
It was like just into his line running. Didn't have to break stride, but nor did Chris Wood. So I think...
No, good point.
I think they're both top
passes. They share
passes.
The spoils.
Yeah, they do. Fair enough, okay. Yeah. The lucky people can take the... They could have it half and half. One have it for the summer, totally. One have it for the winter.
So, yeah, that's our end of season wrap-up. It was an eventful season. Just so much happened. It was bloody good fun when you could look back on it. Okay, so we'll end this part there. We'll be back in part three. We'll have a little chat about the Socceroos and the World Cup. And then, a little interview with Michael Bridges and the head of CPFC Sydney, Jimmy Fletcher. All right, see you in part three. Hello and welcome back to Exiled Eagles, sponsored by Top Corner Recruitment. Next football on the horizon is the World Cup. I see, amazingly, Christian Benteke is being called into the provisional squad for Belgium. So that's impressive and staggering in equal measures. Mark, our resident Socceroos expert, how are you feeling about the World Cup and France, who you're playing? I'm not sure if you've compared the two squads, but they're a little bit different.
I'm more worried you've referred to me as expert, but in any case, mate,
first time for everything.
I have been keeping a keen eye on the Socceroos. 19 out of the 26-man provisional squad have currently assembled in Antalya in Turkey. I hope I got that pronunciation correct. A few boys still missing from that. Obviously, Jedi, who's got the promotion match coming up for Villa against Fulham this weekend. I think Matty Ryan is on his way, but most are there at the moment. For those of you who don't know, we have been put in a group with France, Peru, and Denmark. So you would say on the outset, other experts around the world say we've got no chance of getting out the group. Statistically, I read yesterday some company that crunches a whole lot of data and whatnot. We've got a 22% chance of getting through the group, which is probably about right. One in four chance. I do fancy us. I reckon we might get through with 5 points and on goal difference. I'm hoping that we have France first up. Now, France typically are slow starters in big tournaments, so I'm hoping to maybe nick a point off them, have our way with Peru and draw Denmark. That's my plan.
Wow, that is ambitious.
You think so? Anyway,
you reckon you'll get a draw with France?
Mate, you're the one that called me an expert, so whatever. we've got a few things going for us there in the case of the France squad. No Martial, no Koeman, no Payet, no Lacazette, no Sissoko. They've got these other blokes running around, Pogba, someone, and Mbappe.
Yeah, of course, all their other players are even better than them.
Whatever. Mendy, who hasn't played since April with a knee injury, is in. So he'll be refreshed and come out guns blazing, or not played much football and won't be much chopped. So I'm hoping for the latter of the two. Peru are up against it by virtue of their captain being suspended for taking a banned substance. Tested positive for a bit of the old coke.
In Peru, what a surprise.
I know, South Americans, and I believe it was cocaine.
Can I say, Mark, on that,
yes,
they even admitted that he didn't actually take it, and his ban got overturned, and then it got reinstated, but for longer.
Yeah. I don't know how that works,
I can give you the reason why.
Why?
Chris Sutton was the guy sitting on it. He doesn't like it.
It all comes back to Chris Sutton. So as you say, Dale, he did get reinstated and got a 12-month shot down to 6 months. Someone at WADA, or whoever pulls the strings, has had a bit of a rethink and went, you know what, we're putting this back in place and you're getting 14 months now. So at the moment he's out, they have appealed that. Now, I'm in two minds about this. If he's done that and got nicked and is out, well, fair cop, you just got to take it on the chin. But I'm worried whether if, A, he gets reinstated and, hey, the kipper's back and we all come out and have a day out, or B, he has his suspension left in place and they all galvanise and come out and you know, play far better than they might have been with him there. So I don't know what to cheer for tomorrow with the outcome of that. And also with that, we have Denmark, obviously, with Christian Eriksen. He's played very well. So, yeah, we'll see, mate. I'm backing us to get something out of it. Maybe 4 points, but I reckon we probably need 5 to get through. From your groans earlier, you don't share my optimism in us getting those points.
No, I mean, I hope they do, though. I seriously hope they do. The longer they're in the tournament, the better.
Yeah,
keep so we'll see how we go, mate. Up and all that.
Yeah, we're a couple of guys in good form doing good things. Jedi, obviously, with Villa at the moment, that are on the cusp of getting back in the Premier League. Matty Ryan, our national keeper, who's got the third best season. Stats for keepers in the Premier League this season, his first season in the Premier League. Bearing in mind, in every game he had to face 11 outfield players coming at him, Lewis Dunk obviously being one of them as well, that conveniently put 4 past him to equal the record of own goals in a Premier League season. And Aaron Moy, who's been the cornerstone of Huddersfield and what they're doing to A, get promoted, and B, stay in the mix. So, you know, those boys steering the ship. We've got Daniel Arzani, who is a bolter that's been added in, the most evasive player in the A-League this season, 19 years old, 86 evades this season over a 27-game season, about 32, 34 evades more than anyone else, so head and shoulders there. Timmy Cahill, don't need to say much more about him. If he scores, he'll only be the 4th player ever to score a goal in 4 consecutive World Cups.
And do you think he should be in the squad, bearing in mind he can't even get in the Millwall team at the moment?
Well, mate, he's only not in the Millwall team because he elbowed bejeebers out of some bloke and suspended for 3 games.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, look, in all seriousness, he's been there. He loves the big stage. Have him as a pitch hitter, you know, 15, 18, 20 minutes to go, need something out of it.
Yeah,
Timmy
yeah.
comes on, gets a bit of service, headed into the corner, boom, done. I just think
that's what you want.
Yeah, I just think he's worth taking, mate. And then, of course, in the lead up to the World Cup, we famously had Ange Postecoglou resign once we had qualified, and have Bert van Marwijk appointed our coach for the World Cup, very much in the same vein as Gus Hiddink for the 06. World Cup, someone that's been there and done it, taken Netherlands to a final. He is only there for the duration of the World Cup. Graham Arnold taking the reins after that. So, you know, obviously he's there for a bit of a cash grab, but I think on a world stage like that, he's trying to put his best foot forward, likes a bit of the cattle that he's got, and made him optimistic. Why not? We're ridiculously optimistic here in Australia about the World Cup. Like, I listen to a lot of football podcasts and all your mob over there all go, well, you know, obviously they aren't going to do anything or whatever. And I'm sitting there going, really? Because we are. We're going to do something. Nah. You know, clearly we're not. But we.
That's the attitude, mate. Yeah, that's the
we
attitude.
We don't think it.
Well, that's what's the point?
And, you know, hey, who knows? We'll see. So exciting times coming up and, about 20-something days away. So I can't wait.
Yeah, exciting. Some brutal kickoff times, though. I mean, France Australia is pretty nice at 8 p.m, but there's a 2 England games at 4 o'clock in the morning on weekdays. So yeah, it's not going to be a lot of games watched live.
Mate, ours aren't too bad. We've got France 8 p.m. Saturday night. Then we've got 10 p.m. on the Wednesday night, which is Peru or Denmark, and then the following one is okay, midnight. Good. So it's worst case scenario for us in the group.
Yeah, that's
in
all
the
right.
group games is just. A weekly Palace game.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah, 4 in the morning is a bit rough for you boys.
Yeah, very much so. I think we've got 1 10 o'clock one as well, which isn't too bad.
Okay.
We've been watching a lot of games live. Mark, thanks for that.
No worries, pleasure.
Decent wrap up that. Yeah. Someone's actually done some research on this podcast. My God.
Oh, jeez. You're very true, though.
Time to start up, boys.
Oh. Right in the heart, Tony.
Yeah. Daggers in my heart.
Still about to bring up Mason Mount. Yeah. okay, so a few weeks ago, the president of the Sydney Supporters Club set up this five-a-side tournament, the Mr. Perfect five-a-side tournament, which was brought a bunch of Australian-based supporters groups together to raise money and awareness for the men's mental health charity, Mr. Perfect. It was actually a really good event. It was won by Oz Spurs, who beat Palace, actually, in the final. So well done to them. Everton came down, and the Chelsea fans and United fans were down there. So those of you that Optus can find a video of the day on Optus or on their Facebook page. We can also post some links. I was down there. I spoke to the organiser and president of CPFC Sydney, Jimmy Fletcher, and also ex-Leeds, Sunderland, Sydney FC and Newcastle player Michael Bridges. Here's what they had to say. Okay, so I am here with El Presidente, a.k.a. Jimmy Clean Sheets, a.k.a. Jimmy Fletcher. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, good times. How are you?
Yep, very good, very good. So we are here at the Mr. Perfect Five-A-Side tournament, which you have organised. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I thought it'd be just a good opportunity to get a few clubs together. Clubs we've all played 11-a-side against, but try and get them in a smaller-sided format, try and get them under one roof and try and raise a bit of money for charity for Mr. Perfect, which we've been quite closely linked to in the past year or so. And yeah, it's been working out well.
And tell us about Mr. Perfect.
So Mr. Perfect was started by a friend of mine called Terry. We actually played football together a few years ago for our local team. And then I just kind of found out about some of the mental health struggles he had gone through and the charity that he was starting off the back of that. They've also started a football team to run alongside charity, Mr. PFC, so I joined them last season. And yeah, it's just a, you know, it's an issue which is kind of prevalent in today's society and everyone can kind of relate to. And, you know, football is such a good opportunity to bring a bunch of blokes together and try and tackle the issue.
Yeah, absolutely. Fair play. And how's the day gone so far, both personally for you on the pitch and sort of organisation-wise?
It's gone pretty good. Started quite slowly on the pitch. Lost our first game to the Oz Spurs. They were decent, though. They got a good team. But we've kind of gone from strength to strength from there. Lining up for another rematch with Tottenham in the final. So hopefully we can get a result on that one. But in terms of organisation, it's been great. And lots of generous sponsors come on board. Carlsberg have donated some beer, the Palace Hotel, some vouchers. Got a portable barbecue. Ultra Football have donated a shirt of the winner's choice. All the teams have turned up. They've all got at least five players, so that's good. And fingers crossed they'll all pay as well.
We'll see about that. I think it's fair to say you are the glue that binds CPFC Sydney together. You sort out our merch, you've sorted us out where we go and watch the games, you sort out all the 11-a-side games as well. It's a good effort. How much time does it take up?
It takes a while, but you know, I enjoy it and it's kind of cool to see how far you can take it. The Premier League's a powerful vehicle to have behind you, even for a smaller club like us. But yeah, it's crazy seeing everyone kind of come through the doors of the pub at 2 a.m. and cheering the boys on. And to be honest, someone's got to organise us lot, otherwise.
Absolutely. The whole thing would fall apart around our feet. So it looks like Palace are safe for another season. Happy with how it's gone?
Very happy, very happy. I think last night was probably the happiest I've been after a Palace victory. It just felt like the whole first seven games never happened. I like the way Luka gave the ball to Benteke at the end. That was a nice bit of closure on the whole issue for me. But yeah, it was a restless night after that, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely. The adrenaline was pumping. All right, Jimmy Clean Sheets, thank you very much. Good luck in the final.
Thank you, Johnny. Cheers.
So I'm here with Michael Bridges. Had an illustrious career in the UK and here in the A-League. How did you find playing here in the A-League after playing in the UK for so long?
It was nice and refreshing, actually, just to be able to play again on a regular basis. The standard of the game, or the pace of the game, I should say, wasn't as intense as what we've been used to. With my legs, my injuries, it was easier to adapt. The biggest thing I found was the heat. Waking up in the morning after like having 10 injuries and 10 operations, didn't need to do the warm-up on the bike in the UK. I used to find that I'd be sitting on a bike warming up for about half an hour before and just to get the blood flowing.
Right.
Sounds crazy, but so true. Get rid of the aches and pains. Didn't have that here. And really, really found out that I was able to get up and train every day without having any aches and pains. And that, for me, was a massive plus.
Right. And what about playing the games in a heap? Because the games played here in the summer. How do you adapt to that?
Oh, it was hilarious. I mean, the first match, I'll never forget. I was thinking, 26 degrees. This is going to be a breeze. Absolutely blown out my backside. hit us after about 60 minutes. I remember looking at the bench going, you've got to get me off. I said, this is intense. And then they said, this is mild. And then the week after, we played Wellington Phoenix, and it got to 41. And I'm thinking, there's no way I'm going to be able to run out there. Thankfully, they've got this system over here where if it's a certain temperature, the games get called off.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's called, but I was grateful that it was in that day.
Right.
So I really struggled. But the best story was Emil Heskey. I got him over here to play with the Jets. Similar thing to him. He asked what the temperatures were like. I told him, listen, 22, 24 degrees, it's not bad. His first game was 32 degrees. He nearly passed out on the field. Priceless moment.
Did he score as well? Did he score on his debut?
Yeah, I think he did. But he didn't enjoy the lies I told him.
I can imagine. Newcastle gets hot as well. And they're talking of moving it to winter. Do you reckon that's a good idea, moving the A-League to that?
Well, it would certainly help with the heat. The thing then, you've got to battle with the other codes. It's all about the supporters getting the grounds. That's the biggest issue here. That's why the summer comp for the A-League does so well, because there's, you know, the fans want to watch something, or the people, and you tend to find that there's other codes come to watch the games and then get interest in it and get a love for the game. So it's I'm all for it for the heat. It coincides with the normal leagues that are going around in State League, so it makes sense. But again, it comes down to volume and viewers.
Figures, yeah, absolutely. And you're sort of a media personality over here. Have you moved over here for good, or what's your plans?
Plans are loving the media, loving the coaching, just busy going through the badges at the moment. I've got the pro license to finish off in September, which I'm looking forward to doing. Always wanted to get into coaching. The media is great. You get to watch football. You get to talk about the beautiful game, and I can talk crap for a living, so I absolutely love it. So for the foreseeable future, for the family, I've got a twin boy and girl. They're growing up here. It's a great environment and a great country to be in. But I want to be a coach, and I'll never say never about return to the UK if a coaching opportunity came up. So
yeah, makes sense. Fair enough. And we're a Crystal Palace podcast. I assume you've watched them a little bit. What do you think of their season so far?
You know what it is? I'm absolutely buzzing that Palace are staying in the Premier League. When I saw the first seven games of the season, and I'm seeing the players on the team sheet, thinking there's something majorly wrong here. This is just not right. Zaha, different class. Townsend used to be at Newcastle. Just think he's got an abundance of talent. Kabay. And then you see Milivojevic, who's been, for me, when Mili Yerdnak was at Palace, Mili was like a bit of a leader and a role in there. I know they might have had a fallout with Dan at the time. I think when Mili went, you were just missing a bit of grit, determination there. Milivojevic has come in, he's got that void going. And thankfully Roy has managed to find something to make these players gel and perform.
Yeah.
And if Palace had gone down, it would have been a tragedy, because like you see, the players, Selhurst Park, I was over there at Christmas. I took 22 Premier League fans from Australia. We went to Wembley. We went to Stamford Bridge. We went to Anfield. And I took them to a Fulham game.
Oh, yeah.
And also Selhurst Park. And every one of them came away from Selhurst Park. It was the 3-2 defeat against Arsenal.
Oh, well, we almost did it.
Almost did it.
Yeah.
They could not believe the passion from the Selhurst Park fans, that they never stopped singing. And it was something that you had to see to believe.
Yeah.
And coming away from Christmas, I was like, this team's got to stay in the league. Delighted. Well done, Roy. Or Roy, whatever, mate. Brilliant. Looking forward to Palace next season.
Yeah, absolutely. Aren't we all? All right, Michael, thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate that.
Good man.
Thanks for that. That was great. Okay, yeah, that was good to hear from Michael Bridges. He was spot on there about what he said. So I guess that is the end of the podcast. Dale, you want to give a shout out to our mate Ross, who's doing great things over in Vietnam at the moment?
Yeah, so Ross Compton, hopefully he's listening to this. He's been cycling solo from Hanoi to Ho Chi Minh. I have no idea why. He's a very interesting character. When you speak to Ross one-on-one, he's hilarious, and I think this is one of his harebrained schemes that just went a bit too far. He should now be in the last couple of 100 kilometres. So, mate, your Facebook post has been brilliant. Keep on going, and hopefully, if nothing else, this gives you an hour or something else to listen to apart from those crazy Vietnamese on the road.
Yeah, absolutely. Sterling effort.
Well done, mate.
Cool. Well, I guess we'll wrap it up there for the season. We'll be back during the World Cup to just give an update, see how Mark's predictions about 5 points went in their group. And we'll be looking forward to the Palace season next year. So, guys, thanks very much for joining us. It's been a pleasure doing the podcast this season with you. Let's hope to do some more great things next year.
Cheers, Tony. See you in the pre-season. Cool. Dale, what number's Mason Mount going to be, do you reckon?
He's staying at Chelsea.
All right. We'll leave it there. All right.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks for listening. Bye. Cheers.
Bye. Cheers, guys. Take it easy.
Bye-bye.